Welcome to A Slice of Orange. I'm Joni Balma. And today, one of my favorite new traditions every election cycle is I get an opportunity to sit down with Dr. Jodi Aegis-Vallejo. She's an associate professor of sociology and American studies and ethnicity. She's associate director of USC Equity Research Institute, co-director of graduate studies in sociology. She does so many incredible things, but what I love is how involved in our Fullerton community she is. And really making sure that we know what's going on with Fullerton elections. So we'll link to a lot of references in the show notes about candidate forums that you can learn more. Aruj Naveed, my co-host for this podcast, has interviewed the candidates for Fullerton. So check out those episodes. And at the end of my talk with Jodi, we talk about how incredible and wonderful Aruj Naveed is. For those of you who might not know, her family has suffered a tragic loss. Her brother was killed in a plane crash off Catalina Island, and she has taken a step back from that to grieve with her family and to try to help them through this incredibly difficult time. For those who want to know how to support, the family has a GoFundMe to try to help them through the financial loss of Harris Ali. So let's get started talking about Fullerton elections with Jodi Aegis-Vallejo. Let's get started. So I'm thrilled to be talking about Fullerton elections with Dr. Jodi Aegis-Vallejo. Let's talk Fullerton. So what are the big issues that voters need to know about? What's your take on the local elections? And let's start with the schools.
Yeah, Jodi, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to see you and talk with you. And of course, get mistaken for you in public when everybody tells me you're the amazing Jodi. I'm like, yeah. No, that's other Jodi.
The best part about election season for me is getting to see amazing people that I keep running into at election events. And you are one of my absolute favorites. And I love getting to talk to you about all of this, because you see a lot of things that I just don't have on my radar. And so it's great to get that perspective.
Oh, thank you so much. And of course, we all appreciate your expertise and dedication to our community and our students. One of the big issues, I think, related to the school board that I'd love to chat about first, that a lot of people keep asking me about, are the school bond measures.
And just for perspective, Fullerton has two school districts. So there are no elections on the ballot for Fullerton Joint Union High School. Joanne Foley and Vicki Calhoun were unchallenged and so will serve another 4 years representing the community, which is great news for everyone. We do have two seats up for election for the Fullerton Elementary School District that we'll talk about. But let's talk about the bonds, because both Fullerton Joint Union High School has a bond, plus Fullerton School District has a bond, and those yard signs don't explain themselves.
They sure don't. And so, like you said, there's two bond measures on our ballot related to the school board, Measure N and Measure L. And Measure N is for the elementary school district, and Measure L is for the high school district. And one of the big issues and something that's very problematic in the state of California is that there's no funding stream from the state that goes toward improving our public school campuses. And the funds that we receive from the state then don't provide monies for capital investments or facility investments, like new roofs or things of that sort. And so both the elementary school district and the high school district, as you mentioned, we have two separate districts in the city of Fullerton. Both of them did very extensive facilities assessments to ascertain the needs for our schools in terms of facility improvements. And the needs are really excessive. And just to give you a few examples, I mean, we have schools where bathrooms are not functioning or working properly, where you can't flush the toilets. We have schools where roofs are leaking. My own daughter's school in the last heat wave, their air conditioning went out and they had to put several classes into the multi-purpose room. And so while there's air conditioning, they need major updates. They don't always function properly. And the kids are, you know, having classes in the MPR because of that. And so a bond, one of the things that a bond does is it levies a tax on homeowners in particular in this case, and it gets paid back through taxes that are based off of the assessed value of your home. So not like the Zillow value.
Correct.
Or the Redfin value. And in the case of the elementary school, Fullertonians were actually already paying a bond that for a bond that was passed over two decades ago. We pay on average about $105 a year, but this bond expires in 2025. And so the school district is asking for a new bond now that will increase the amount that we're paying to about $150 a year. So homeowners are really only being asked to pay an additional $45 a year. But there's a couple things about local bonds that are really important. Like they have to have 55% of the vote to pass, right? And then 100% of that money has to stay local. So it's actually, in addition to an investment in our schools, it's actually an investment in our local economy. And we're mandated by the state to pay prevailing wages. So it has significant benefits for jobs and the economy. But one of the things, Jody, and I'd love your take on this too, on the role of schools in our community in Fullerton, especially, which, you know, this phrase always gets bandied about that we're the education city. I mean, I've used it myself. I literally moved here from Dana Point, you know, to send my daughter to Fullerton schools. But, you know, the bond is important even if you don't have kids, because people move to Fullerton for our schools. Families move here. And our schools are filled with so many amazing teachers and staff. They have so many kinds of supplemental activities and programs. And, you know, people move here because of the excellent public education. And it's really also part of how vibrant our civil society is in Fullerton. It's also one of the things that I love most about our city. And so it's something that enhances our community involvement. It also is something that has a big impact on our home values. And so even good school systems, good schools. So even if you don't have a kid in the schools, good schools are the reason why people want to move here. People want to raise their families here. So the bond is really an investment that's made for our larger city institutions beyond the schools. So if we, you know, I think that if we want to live up to our reputation as an education community, we really need to make sure that these bonds pass.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is really important to understand, that this isn't because the school district, the board, did not spend the money they got from the state.
Yes.
On construction, on modernization, on repairs. And when bonds don't pass, then money has to be taken out to fix the air conditioning. And that's a major expense, to patch the roof instead of doing a long-term fix with bond money of a new roof that then opens up that maintenance cost on an annual basis. So I want to amplify a couple things you said and make sure people really hear, which is that it's on assessed value. And so on your ballot, it will ask you for the elementary school, it's $30 per $100,000 in assessed value. So for those seniors that are under Prop 13, you know, I was talking to somebody who paid, you know, back in 1960, bought the house for $70,000. And I'm like, so that prorated would be less than $30 because it's less than $100,000. And she was a little bit confused because, you know, her house would probably sell for $2 million. Well, that's not what it's going to be based on. So I want to amplify that it's $100,000 of assessed value number is multiplied by. And then also that Fullerton School District, the elementary school district, there is a property tax assessment that will expire. So it's just for a short time going to overlap. And then the other one would drop your property tax. And so this is just asking people to extend it and keep funding the elementary school. Now, the Fullerton Joint Union absolutely has major needs. They passed a bond more recently. And so the needs, to me, if you're prioritizing, of course, we would love for everybody to support everything. And there are needs in the community, and they would do amazing things with that money. But really, when we're triaging the needs, I think most people that I've talked to say that it is crucial that Measure N pass, and it would be wonderful if Measure L pass.
Yeah, that's, I really appreciate you lifting up those points and also making that distinction.
Yeah. So hopefully people will look at that and see those needs, because particularly with just the changing demands on elementary schools in the state, you know, we could have a whole different discussion, and I'd love to, about changing the funding in the schools in the state, of how that is happening. The physical, the facility needs of TK, of putting younger and younger kids in our elementary schools, which weren't built for four-year-old bodies. To do that, the schools have to take existing money to make those changes, to buy new, rugs instead of big desks, little desks for little bodies. So a lot has had to change, and there hasn't been additional funding for those capital costs that they've had to do. And so we need all of that to be funded by the community that needs to support these efforts. So, I appreciate you talking about home prices, because it is, and you have a number of realtors who are saying, hey, yes, we absolutely get asked about the schools, and to say that a bond has failed and failed and failed and failed. You know, we saw that in Orange Unified, where they had so many failed bonds. We're seeing that in Brea with so many failed bonds and aging schools. You know, Fullerton High School is, 125 years old. So we have aging schools in North Orange County, and we need those investments. So I know that money is tight for a lot of people. It's a hard decision, but it is the question of, we are talking about an annual payment of property tax that, you know, it has a big investment. So.
May I ask you another question, Jody? Because,
sure,
you know, you're an expert on propositions, and I disseminate all of your information on propositions in the election so widely. And I just so appreciate you doing that. But other people are also asking about Prop 2, which authorized bonds for public schools and community facilities. And some people are getting confused. They're like, Prop 2, what about Measure N? Am I going to be paying double? Can you just give like a brief explainer of that?
Sure, absolutely. So Prop 2 is statewide, and that does not come out of property tax. So we fund statewide bonds. Prop 2 and Prop 4 are bonds, and they are on our ballot because the legislature wants to borrow money and has to get our approval as voters for those. And so it is the beauty of our California direct democracy that the legislature cannot take out massive loans without our approval. That's a majority approval on the ballot. And that money does not increase property taxes. That money is repaid by the legislature out of the revenue funds that we pay as taxpayers. And so the general revenue fund then issues bonds. Our treasurer and controller deal with that part of putting bonds on the market and actually getting investments from people, and then paying them back as an investment. So it increases the cost of the loan. And so you want to do that for major capital projects. You never want to take out a mortgage for computers. You want to do it for a huge, massive capital project. And that's what the state is doing. There are two bonds. Prop 2 is for schools. That'll be matching funds. And so if Prop 2 passes and Prop N passes, Fullerton School District would be able to apply for matching funds from the schools. And that just helps so much because it increases the investment by our state in our local schools.
But that would double our money.
Yes, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. No promises made that it will be matched, but yes, there is the opportunity for matching. Some of it goes to community colleges for matching, some of it goes to K-12, and Prop 4 is the other bond on the ballot that goes for climate change. If Prop 2 fails in the state and Prop N still passes, that means that Fullerton School District would be able to invest, having less money because there would be no possibility for the matching funds from the state, but they're independent. And so, you know, if you're going to prioritize that, you know, start with your community, and hopefully the state voters will support that investment, but they are not going to increase your property tax with Prop 2 or Prop 4.
That is great to know. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So let's talk about elections. We have two seats for the Fullerton School District that are on the ballot, two incumbents that are running and two challengers who've been really active in campaigning. So the first is Hilda Sugarman, who's served on the board for a significant amount of time, and James Cho, who's challenging her. So I, you know, we were both at the candidate forum together. I encourage people, and I'll link to that in the show notes if you missed the League of Women Voters candidate forum. I thought it was really instructive and revealing about differences and priorities and the answers of all four of the candidates we're going to talk about. We'll also talk about Leonel Talavera and Vanessa Australia, but we'll take it one by one. So what are you hearing in the community? What are your thoughts? And as a parent, what are you seeing from the board and the candidates themselves with Hilda Sugarman and James Cho?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And first, I want to say that we're really actually fortunate in Fullerton because we have a functional board in many ways, even though there are certainly issues. But unlike some of our surrounding school districts like Placentia, Yorba-Linda, where I grew up, notice I didn't move back there when we decided to move back up to North Orange County, or Orange Unified, or even other districts around our area, our school board is not filled with extremists. Our school board is not filled with people who are giving into the larger culture wars necessarily, or allowing that to overtake their decisions for our children. And that's something that I really appreciate. But with that being said, there's two contenders, as you mentioned, who are vying for seats with incumbents on the school board. And the first is Hilda Sugarman and James Cho. And Hilda Sugarman used to be a teacher. She founded and basically directs the Fullerton Education Foundation, which is a nonprofit foundation that gives money to teachers and schools. And she's been a long time board member. And she's being challenged by James Cho. James Cho grew up in Fullerton, went through Fullerton schools, ended up going into the military, worked in Washington for a period of time, and decided to come back to Fullerton to raise his children, like many of us have been called to this city. And James Cho lives in the school district, that a school area, trustee area, that is about 50% Korean American. Uh-huh. And he's really been concerned and running on this platform that Hilda, who has served on the school board for decades,
28 years, first elected in 1996.
Yes. That Hilda doesn't represent the current city the current constituency their area, that she's not a working parent, that there's issues around racial ethnic representation and understanding, and that it's time for a new voice on the school board. Mm-hmm. Who's connected to parents, who's connected to PTAs, who's connected to parents in a different way than Hilda is. Hilda, of course, defends herself and says that she brings a different kind of voice that is needed on the school board. She brings experience, and that she's made you know, really a real concerted effort to reach out to the Korean American community in particular. So this is a really interesting battle. James Cho has a slew of endorsements. He's been endorsed by tons of political and grassroots organizations. He's the endorsed candidate for the Democratic Party. He has raised a lot of money from a myriad of people, from small donations to big donations. In fact, both candidates have. Hilda's basically funding her own campaign, she said. directly that her husband's funding her campaign, who used to be a high-level executive at St. Jude. And so you really see this contrast, I think, between this generational contrast.
Yes.
Also intersects with positionality in terms of race and ethnicity and class and, you know, working parents.
Well, and I have to say, it's one of the reasons I was most excited to talk to you, because our academic, we're both professors. And so our academic, you know, lives sort of cross over and give us all these incredible examples. And so it is this microcosm of what we talk about in the classroom. The idea that we have district elections to represent the smaller community of constituents that have a hard time in an overall at-large election. And so, you know, having someone, and I was really struck by him saying that at the candidate forum, and saying that with some other interviews where I've seen him, and talking to my students at the Meet the Candidate event on campus, where both, you know, all four of the candidates were there and doing a lot of grassroots campaigning as well. But he said, what will it mean to the Korean students that I can be elected? And that idea of what does representation mean still resonates with a lot of communities in Fullerton. And, you know, Jesse Latour did an incredible presentation that I was sorry to miss because I had other election conflicts. But 100 years ago in 1924, the election of Fullerton that saw KKK members mm-hmm. be elected, the legacy that we have, you know, Vicki Calhoun, if she was running, would be talking about the busing of Maple School in South Fullerton, where houses were redlined. That legacy of discrimination still exists when you have this incredibly, you know, accomplished candidate who isn't sure if Fullerton will elect a Korean American to the Fullerton School District. When faced with somebody who has served for 28 years and has name recognition, and when we see voter turnout that is overwhelmingly 50 and older, which is what early numbers are showing us, people will vote based on name recognition. They haven't been to the candidate forum. They haven't met the candidates. And so they will vote for someone that they have voted for in the past. So all of this kind of is heightened by this example in our elections.
Our city is such a microcosm because it's this city that is so diverse racially and ethnically, yet it's yes. still extremely segregated by race and class. And these are, as you said so eloquently, these are remnants of historical processes, right, that are totally exacerbated by contemporary social and economic challenges. I actually write about this in an op-ed regarding South Fullerton that should be coming out in the Fullerton Observer any day now. But this race, and really a lot, many of the races in on the city council and for our school board are such a microcosm of this. And it's why it's so important to increase the civic engagement of our younger generation. You know, what you do so effectively at Fullerton College, I went to Fullerton College, by the way, for a year out of high school. And it's so important. I mean, there were, after the candidate forum that we were both at, I was kind of hanging out afterward and just talking and mingling because, you know, I love to talk to people and like you do as academic researchers. Yeah. And there were so many people there who were really upset. They were really upset about feeling not represented, about feeling yes. like they didn't have a voice on the school board, feeling yes. that Hilda does not represent them as parents currently facing all of these challenges today. Either as somebody who feels, you know, marginalized or minoritized in our society or in our city, or as somebody who's struggling to make it work with their families. And these are people who are very involved in the schools. I mean, this is like a PTA, right. ex-PTA president of one of the schools. These are not just, you know, these are people who are civically engaged, are really engaged in the community, trying to make a difference. So there is this split in this area. And I don't know, you know, some people are like, I think James could win. And other people are like, no, Hilda, like, she's the incumbent. She's got the name recognition. she's got, you know, she's been a part of politics for so long. So I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? And it's fascinating because, you know, I've been doing, we did, the League of Women Voters did 11 candidate forums over the past month and a half. And
I've been so busy.
Really amazing to see the questions that get asked, and the and so many of them are common, and so we talk about, you know, term limits and whether we should have them, and politicians always give the answer, we have term limits, they're called elections, and every political scientist groans because they're like, oh, the huge advantage of incumbency and name recognition and people not doing research and gerrymandering these district lines so that politicians can pick their constituents. However, I also see this other debate of, you know, particularly for school boards, should you have to have children to serve on the school board? And I'm torn because I'll talk about why I think we should and why that's really a valuable asset. I don't think it should be a disqualifier if you don't, because of course, the whole idea of childless cat ladies still having value, and menopausal women don't just have to care for grandchildren. So I don't think parenthood should be a requirement. However, the perspective that you bring as a parent in the elementary school district, and you know, everyone is going to age out of that fairly quickly because, you know, there's a time limit on how long your kids are going to be in elementary. However, the entire educational world has shifted on its axis since the pandemic. And the educational industrial complex of apps for this and programs for that. And I, as a parent who is, you know, fairly technologically advanced, still is like, how many apps do I have to download to find out what is happening at my child's school? And, you know, if you got elected in the 1980s, as we have someone serving on the Fullerton Joint Union High School, if you got elected in the 1990s, if you're just not as connected to the stress of parenting, the bullying that happens on social media, the massive helicopter parenting expectations, all of that has really changed. And the stakes are higher than they were when we were in school. The kids are stressed, the teachers are stressed, the staff is stressed, and our board members, not knowing that, having to translate that, just delays implementation of what can relieve stress for everybody.
Yeah, I think you raised so many good points. I mean, personally, don't necessarily think you have to have children in a district to serve on the board. I think that good public education and a commitment to public education and the values around public education are everybody's business. I think that everybody needs to be invested in public education, and certain people bring particular types of expertise. I think that it's very valuable to have a teacher's voice on the school board, for example, but somebody who's dealing with these issues currently, or who has dealt with them very recently, that's very different than a teacher's perspective from 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Or someone who has served in other capacities in a school setting. I think a diversity of voices is important on a school board, and you can define diversity in many different ways. But I do think that there's time for fresh ideas. There's time for fresh connections and networks. I think absolutely the landscapes of schools has changed. Politics has changed significantly. The ways in which school board members are interacting in communities, the kinds of decisions they're making are very much rooted in this new context around which people are trying to figure out. And you could see the differences in the answers between Hilda and James.
Yes.
Very, very distinctly.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the other race on the ballot, Leonel Talavera and Vanessa Estrella.
Yes. So there's another really important and interesting race between Leonel Talavera, as you mentioned, and Vanessa Estrella. And this is a race that is occurring in South Fullerton, Area 5 of South Fullerton. Leonel Talavera, he is the incumbent. Now, Leonel Talavera, this is actually the first election that, well, I shouldn't say that. He ran for election against Jeanette Vasquez many years ago. He lost the election. Jeanette won in a landslide. Mm-hmm. But Jeanette eventually resigned during COVID, and Leonel was appointed to the seat. So this is his first election, I think, that he's seriously, his first campaign that he's seriously running against Vanessa Estrella. What's interesting about both of them is that they're both Democrats. Mm-hmm. Vanessa has garnered tons of endorsements, political endorsements from elected leaders, of congressmen, assemblywomen, city council leaders, other members of elected boards. She has a ton of public support, a real grassroots campaigns with many donations from $5 to $100. And she's endorsed by every organization under the sun. Leonel Talavera, he does not have any political endorsements. Vanessa Estrella actually beat him out for the Democratic Party endorsement, but he was endorsed by the teachers union. The teachers union actually endorsed both of the incumbents. They endorsed Hilda and Leonel Talavera, which wasn't a surprise to me. They went with the incumbents. It was the safe choice, according to them. It's very common. So to me, that's not a referendum on who they think should win. But this election is really important because it is an area in which the consequences of our very torrid racist past in our city are still playing out in the schools. So area schools are disproportionately Latino. About 9 out of 10 students are Latino. It's a high level of English language learners. Academic gaps are widening in these schools. There's a lot of different dynamics going on. There's increased income segregation in the schools. I wrote about this in the Fullerton Observer because of high housing costs that are happening in our city, something that our city council fails to address. All of these things are connected. And Leonel Talavera, the incumbent, has done nothing to actually address any of these issues in Area 5 schools. I'm actually very troubled because he had a number of false claims on his ballot statement. He said things like he balanced the budgets and prevented the school board from levying taxes on residents. Well, he's taken credit for a lot of things that our amazing Fullerton school district staff does. Board members do not balance the budget. They vote on the budget. Board members do not have the taxes. So there's a lot of erroneous claims that he is making. And the only thing he's ever championed on the school board is an elite sports academy that is in a school that's out of Area 5 and that costs $1,000 a month for people to attend, or that allows kids to basically do an independent study and skip taking PE in an elective to go to like a pay for play sports program. What I think is particularly troubling is that one of these programs that kids can go to is this program called ZT Baseball that Leonel used to sit on the board for and that Leonel used to coach for. And this is one of the major donors to his campaign. This is something, these connections and this conflict of interest is something that Leonel has never disclosed to publicly to constituents. And they are now actually, Aruj writes about this in the Fullerton Observer, ZT Baseball, the same company, now is basically going to be taking over South Fullerton parks to the dismay of the city. And so you really see this move toward privatization of our public goods with this company that this trustee has ties to, and his inability to address problems in the school. Now, Vanessa Estrella has said that she will work hard for these issues. She is the president of the district's English Language Advisory Committee. She's very connected to families. She owns the iconic El Pachuco Zoot Suits in Fullerton, which is a store with global acclaim. She was actually came to the U.S. undocumented, rose up through public schools, was president of the Honor Society at Fullerton College, double major at Cal State Fullerton in business and criminal justice, graduated with honors on scholarships, and really understands the power of public education and is committed to listening to students and collaborating with the district to ask a lot of these important questions. And I think that's what kind of, you know, that's what really impresses me about James and Vanessa, is that they're willing to ask questions that are important to push our district forward even more in ways that the incumbents are not.
Yeah, I was really impressed with their questions, with their thoughtful answers, and with their perspective of challenging Fullerton School District to continue to improve, to continue to serve every student in an individualized way, and to support our teachers in that, because I think that their answers really show that they understand the role of board members, that they are not the frontline staff, that they are policymakers and wanting to make sure that every voice is heard. And that often, you know, it is lost on board members that just want to be champions and boosters and cheerleaders. And then when they run for election, take credit for all of the achievements of the school district. And I felt like that tone and perspective was really clear. So
need PR people for our district, right? Leaders understand the past, they understand the present moment, and they lead and ask questions for our future.
Right. And I also think even when, you know, they may have been addressing something that's a state law that the local school district doesn't have power over, it was a really thoughtful idea of, we need to communicate this directly to the community and to parents to make sure that they understand how we are going to implement a law that might be misunderstood or, you know, manipulated to be misunderstood, and that we don't want to use scare tactics. We don't want to create fear in our community about what's happening in the school, but to be transparent and to go out of our way to communicate that. And I was really happy to hear that from both James and Vanessa at the candidate forum.
Yes, I was really happy to hear that too. I'm thinking in particular of their answers around our state mandated sex education curriculum.
Right.
I thought both of them were brilliant and exactly how you would want a school board member to approach
this
in terms of working with parents, working with families, helping people understand, still giving parents options around choice, but really making this a community response.
Yes. Yes. So let's talk about city council. Oh, we have three races, two incumbents, one Bruce Whitaker is termed out, and that is getting super exciting. Four candidates, but one of them was arrested for perjury on falsifying the document of who collected the signatures. So the district attorney, we could have a whole nother episode about the one political case that Todd Spitzer is going to actually prosecute in our county, where the FBI seems to be holding court in Anaheim and with Andrew Doe at the county. But we're going to go after Scott Markowitz, who signed a document, which is clearly wrong, to commit perjury. But there are four candidates there. Linda Whitaker, the wife of Bruce Whitaker, who is termed out of office, is running. And then Jamie Valencia, who at the candidate forum that we'll also link to in the show notes, the League of Women Voters candidate forum for the city council. Jamie Valencia seemed to have the same answers as Nick Dunlop and Fred Jung for almost everything. So there's definitely an alliance there. And then Kitty Jaramillo. So the other two races, Nick Dunlop, the incumbent, Jan Flory, who has served in the past, is running again. And then Fred Jung, who's, according to the Fullerton Observer, raised at least $250,000 for a city council district race.
From out of town.
Almost all from out of town. But if you question it, apparently you're racist. As he claimed Matt Truxaw, his opponent, was when he asked why all of these donations were from out of Fullerton. You can look at the Fullerton Observer for that exchange. Matt Truxaw who has said that he just believes in democracy and is running a grassroots campaign without a lot of money. He's walked the district because he just believes that an incumbent should have to face the voters and answer questions. So, the name not on the ballot, Tony Bussola, who is a major donor and often has Fred Jung and Nick Dunlop and Bruce Whitaker vote in the way that he supports. So let's talk about all of those races.
Oh my gosh. This has been such an interesting election year. I want to just frame a couple things out. Many people know this, but some people might not, right? Our city council is contentious in so many different ways. I mean, there's this three-person majority. You mentioned a few of them, right? You've got Nick Dunlap, who's running in my area, Area 2, for re-election against Jan Flory. He's also currently our mayor. You've got Fred Jung, who's the second kind of person of the three majority, and Bruce Whitaker, who's termed out. And the city council has actually been super contentious these last 4 years. And I just really want to stress that our city is so amazing. I love Fullerton so much, but we do have a lot of problems. We have a problem with the roads. We've got a severe problem with affordable housing. We've got an unhoused or a homeless crisis. We've got empty buildings. We've got a police force that is dwindling. And our city council majority, these three, have had 4 years to try to address these issues. This is something that I am hearing people are really upset about. But under the current majority, our city is going to be operating next year at almost a $10 million deficit. And these three leaders continuously tout themselves as change makers, as people leading Fullerton into the new era, but they never come up with any solutions. And so a lot of people are upset in the city. It's also come to a head with various issues related to policies in the city, the Union Pacific Trail and Park, the walk on Wilshire, that our city council members don't support or haven't supported in the past, even though an overwhelming majority of city residents across our different districts support. And so this is becoming very contentious, and people are asking why. Who are these three city council members beholden to? Why aren't they listening to the community? And this has led some people to run, some people to feel like, I need to run. This is really
absolutely
behind Jan Flory running for city council again. She served on the city council for like 14 years, was once mayor. This is the impetus for Kitty Jaramillo running for city council again in District 4. And, you know, I was at a recent city council forum with the three and all of the people running for city council, you know, and they provide no solutions for how to improve our city. You know, they're against any kind of small sales tax that could help with the deficit. They're against any kind of regulation or rent control that could increase affordable housing. They say they're for businesses, yet again, they don't listen to businesses pleading with them to keep the walk on Wilshire open. And so a lot of people are saying that, like, the biggest issue in our city is this retraction of investment that you can see in the decline of our city services. Our city staff is doing as well as they can. We have amazing people on our city staff. I love Daisy Salazar, for example. But our city is understaffed. And part of our issue is this economic and social philosophy that they espouse. And so a shift in the city council would shift this philosophy.
Absolutely.
And that is why people are so invested in this election.
And, you know, I focus on my classroom on local elections, and I ask my students to watch city council meetings, go talk at public comments, at school board meetings. And so many of them over the last 4 years that have watched the meetings or gone to the meetings for Fullerton City Council say, why can't we have nice things? And when we look at Buena Park, that has done so much investment, when we look at Brea, you know, Brea has these amazing tracks. And during the pandemic, it was a godsend to have these beautiful, beautiful walking and biking areas that people could be. It became a community effort with painted rocks and signs that were hopeful when we were all isolated. There is a mental health aspect that along the tracks, we have an outdoor gym. And I see people using it. When you cannot afford to go to the gym, when you can't afford to have equipment in your house, the idea that our city in Brea has invested in community improvements and Fullerton can't even fix the potholes. And when you talk about business investment, you know, I have a number of students who are really active and live text me during the public comments on Walk on Wilshire and are so frustrated that, you know, that Fred Jung just didn't care what anyone was saying and seemed so disinterested if he was there at all for some of the meetings. And I know his health problems have become public because he disclosed them on a podcast. But the idea that my students who are brand new to public administration and municipal government can understand that if you have Walk on Wilshire as a temporary probationary effort, then the businesses are not going to invest in those improvements. If it became permanent, it would be amazing because the businesses would know that they're renting the street, bringing in income for the city of Fullerton, which I don't think has been publicly discussed enough.
That's an excellent point.
That is a rental income for the city. And then they would do improvements. You know, Mulberry Street seems to be the only one willing to put money into something that could have been scrapped in October, might be scrapped in January at the whims of the board when so many people, I think they got 2,000 signatures on their online petition. You know, so many people are showing up for that. And that's the same for the trails. That's the same for so many things. And I've seen them talk about in public comments as they review these meetings, you know, somebody comes and just says a sales tax can't cost more than the tire alignment that I have to pay for. Exactly. I'm paying more on an individual basis to fix my car. If you would just allow the people to vote on a sales tax, maybe it doesn't pass. I don't know. Roads are a massive problem. And when my daughter was, you know, when she was had her driver's permit, I would take her to Fullerton because we don't have any roundabouts in Brea. So I'm like, this is going to be really confusing on the test. You've got to drive around the DMV in Fullerton before you take it. And we could tell from the roads immediately where the town line is from Brea to Fullerton because the roads were rougher. The roads had potholes. It rains the same in Brea and Fullerton. Lots of cars drive on those major roads. And yet, Fullerton is not investing. And you talked about public administrators, the staff that are working for city. It is demoralizing to work to try to improve a city and to have the board ignore your recommendations, to have to watch them fight. My students comment on that all the time. Like, aren't they adults? The tenor of the meetings is dysfunctional. The interactions are petty. And I just think Fullerton deserves better.
We deserve so much better and we want better. And that is what we should be demanding from them. You know, and it's just this complete dismissal by the three. Nick Dunlap has changed his tune a little bit now that he's been elected mayor. He's trying to pander to both sides. You know, I think, well, I don't want to say elected mayor, but chosen mayor. No, this is also a really contentious issue. There was a big controversy over the mayor. I just feel like I need to talk about this for one minute here because I wrote about this in the Fullerton Observer. But, you know, Nick Dunlap, Fred Jung, Bruce Whitaker, they've continuously violated custom. This is another petty action in which they've engaged and also a way in which they've attempted to gaslight all of us in the community. And this is very important for me to relay because they've continuously violated custom on the city council, which is to rotate the mayorship and mayor pro tem. And they've done this to prevent the more progressive council members, Ahmad Zahra and Shayna Charles, from serving as mayor. And they have done this in an attempt to maintain their power consolidation. Now, they will tell you in an attempt to gaslight the public, that the mayor role is symbolic, but it's not symbolic. The mayoral role is not a symbolic title. If it was, why are they persistently violating custom and wanting to serve as mayor? Why are they working so hard to ensure that someone from their majority retains the position? Usually it's Fred Jung. I want to
usually during an election year. Yes. And if it's just symbolic, why is it on Dunlap signs?
Exactly. But also the important thing is that this position is imbued with power because the mayor has the power to agendize items. So the mayor gets to dictate what items are discussed publicly. Otherwise, yes, we have to have two votes from other council members to put an item on the agenda. So the mayor can have anything discussed that they want. This also creates a form of symbolic power in terms of, like you just said, in terms of a reelection, but also it's a form of prestige that people have been able to leverage to get right on boards that actually pay. Fred Jung sits on boards, yes, salary. They pay for his transportation. They pay stipends. And so it's actually a way to generate additional income. So this is not merely a symbolic title. And I just want to emphasize that because it's one of the
absolutely
things to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's really important. And I think particularly with districts, I think what we forget is that the wealthiest areas of Fullerton have been able to maintain the title.
Exactly. And so the wealthiest areas of Fullerton have been able to maintain this title. And people are asking, why don't we get representation? Why aren't our cities getting represented in terms of the mayoral seat? And all this is to say that these things that we've all been discussing, this is why Jan Forey decided to run. She said, yes, she's going to council meetings and she said, you know what? I cannot abide by the incivility. I cannot abide, yes, by the lack of collaboration. You know, she is, yes, she is a Democrat, but she works across the aisle. One of her very best friends, she'll talk about her all the time, is very prominent in the North Orange County Women's Republican Party. Uh-huh. One of her besties is a Republican. And so one person, you know, if Jan were to win or if Kitty were to win in District 4, it would completely shift the, yes, tenor of the city council.
Absolutely. And I want to make sure, because there's so much misinformation in the campaigns. And Tony Bushala wrote a letter to Todd Spitzer asking him to investigate and prosecute Scott Markowitz in this district. And then sent out the campaign. I don't know who paid for it, but I have been getting screenshots of texts that people have gotten implicating and accusing Kitty Jaramillo of being behind the fake candidacy of Scott Markowitz. And that is absolutely false. There's no evidence of that. And the slander against Kitty Jaramillo, who has been campaigning for months, who has been grassroots raising money and going to door after door, talking to people, campaign event, is really unfair. And the idea that people are you know, just spreading lies and rumors about a candidate in our community is really important to combat with the truth.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that Tony Bushala does and is known for, which is these slur campaigns against other candidates in races. And I think what's also, we also have to mention is the connections of power in Fullerton city politics. So there's absolutely no evidence that Kitty is involved. She has come out and said herself that she had no connection at all or understanding or knowledge of this. I know nothing about it. But Tony Bushala wrote to the DA Todd Spitzer. Todd Spitzer is also very close to another person who's very close to Tony Bushala, and that is Sean Nelson, who used to be an assistant DA for Todd Spitzer and is now a judge. And, you know, the DA can decide whether to prosecute or investigate a case. And I'm not saying the DA shouldn't. I think this is a very serious.
I would like the DA to investigate more, not less.
Yeah, it's the same here.
More.
But I just
don't want it to be the singular investigation.
Right. I just have to make that clear.
Absolutely. People would break fewer laws in elections if there were more consequences.
More investigations around elections. Yes. So I think this is very important. And I think it's very unfortunate that this is happening and really taking also the focus off of this particular election, which is super important. I mean, Area 4, District 4 has been represented by Bruce Whitaker for years, who is very disconnected from the community. And now his wife is running for his seat. And she will tell you herself that her qualification is being Bruce's wife. Yes. That her primary qualifications are when, you know, she uses the we a lot when she talks about his political career. Yeah. And Bushala isn't supporting her in this race. He's supporting Jamie Valencia, who is Fred's mentee. And this is very obvious just by all of the signs and the sign place, you know, if you yeah. observe anything, as well as donations, campaign finance.
Yeah.
Islands. And so there's a lot of, again, these efforts at maintaining control of the city council. And I think we need to really ask why. And of course, these city council members will tell you they're not beholden to Tony Bushala, that he's not in any way influencing them. But I think that actions oftentimes speak louder than words.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I love our talks, and I so appreciate you spending time with me. It's great to get perspective. As we close, you know, talking about community, my co-host for this podcast, Aruj Naveed, has suffered a tremendous and tragic loss, and I know that you have worked closely with her as well. And so we're going to, her brother died in a plane crash, and so she's taking a step back from the Fullerton Observer, from this podcast, and we send her all of our love. And I'm going to link to the show note in the show notes, the GoFundMe to help her family through this really difficult time. And I know that you have been really helpful in providing help and support and love.
Just my heart, my soul is with Aruj and her family at this time. We love you, Aruj.
Yeah.
Aruj is an amazing person in our community who works tirelessly.
Tirelessly.
And I hope that.
And for all the good things, for truth, for journalistic integrity, for informing and engaging the public, for mentoring young journalists and getting them involved in and understanding the community issues. And for good things for our community. I mean, that she has the purest heart.
And what are we as a community if we can't come together when people are in need?
Yeah. So thank you very much. And go vote.
Thank you, Jody.